So the first one I'll show you, you've actually seen, we were taking pictures with it earlier, is a mini limon. It's the one that's kind of shaped like a lemon, and it's touch sensitive. So if you squeeze it, you can just squeeze it there. The stronger you squeeze it, the stronger the vibrations
are.
Yes. So that one's very popular.
Oh my God almighty. It's nearly taken off there in my hand, so it has. I like that. Do you hear the buzz?
It's very quiet. Very discreet.
Very discreet.
And you wouldn't know it was a vibrator unless, like, you knew.
No.
So it's great. And
so that would do wonders for
it would, yeah.
Anybody.
Now, that one's 120 euro, which is a little bit expensive. It's more of a kind of an investment piece.
Is that the Lelomona 2, no?
Mini Limon.
Okay, I saw that the Lelomona 2 is sold out on your website.
It is. It's so popular.
Why?
I'm always selling out of that one, but I am getting more back in. It's very, very strong. Lelo's a very popular brand. It's one of those international brands that everybody knows. My first vibrator was a Lelo. I think a lot of people's were. They've been around for about 10 or 15 years. It's a Swedish company.
Okay.
So them and IKEA are taking over the world.
Will you have them back in stock soon?
I will indeed, yes, of course.
Very good news.
Yes.
What next have you for me there?
So next, if those ones are a bit too expensive because they are over 100 euro, this one here is only 40 euro and it's a little heart shape one about the size of a Wexford strawberry.
That's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, listen to that.
So that's just a little battery operated one, but it's still quite strong.
I really like that one, so I do. I think that could do a lot, all right. And it's much neater. It'd fit neatly, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd fit in your pocket.
Yeah, I could actually get a buzz out of that with it just in my pocket. I think it's the only buzz I'd get out of it at this stage in my life, to be honest with you. I like that one. How much would that one set me back?
So that one's 40 euros. And okay. That one's rechargeable as well.
Ah, that's within the range of everybody.
I'll try to turn it off here. There we go.
It's gone mad. It won't go off. I don't know what's happening.
You promised us, and there's people listening in, you promised us a £10.
Both listeners.
Yeah, that's right. You promised us the Morgan Freeman.
Now, I did tell you as well that when I did this at 3:30 this morning, and I genuinely did it at 3:30.
All right.
My Morgan Freeman is not great in it.
Come on.
It's not bad. It's not great.
Go on.
However, I decided I wasn't going to do Morgan Freeman just, you know, hello, Seamus, how are you? I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to do a little bit of story. So, can you imagine if you could buy Morgan Freeman's voice for your sat nav?
Yeah.
Imagine if you could buy it and you put it into the car.
Yeah.
And Morgan Freeman will be doing this.
Please take a right-hand turn in 500 yards. Now, take that turn. On your left-hand side, you'll see an old fat oak tree. That old fat oak tree was planted in 1847 by John Williamson. Wait just a minute while I take a look around and see where we are. Oh, for the love of God, would you turn off that damn indicator? I hope you're happy with yourself now. Thanks to you, it appears we're lost.
And with just 3 days to go until voting in the Brexit referendum, LMFM News will be taking a look at some of the issues which may affect us here in the North East. The impact on cross-border trade, immigration and the reintroduction of a physical border between North and South have all been highlighted as some of the main issues in the referendum debate, as Michael Carolyn now reports.
On Thursday, voters in the North, England, Scotland and Wales, along with an estimated 12,000 British citizens in Louth and Meath, will all have their say on Britain's future in or out of the European Union. If they vote to leave, withdrawal negotiations must be concluded within 2 years. However, any future trade agreement between Britain and the EU could take many years. Negotiations on Canada's took 7 years and Switzerland's 9. If voters decide to stay within the EU, then it's as you were, with additional concessions for Britain secured by David Cameron during negotiations with other EU leaders in February last. Former Taoiseach and Meath TD John Bruton was the EU's ambassador to the United States from 2004 to 2009. He says as Britain would be the first country to leave the EU, the exact impact of such a move is impossible to predict.
Because we don't know who in Britain will be making decisions as to what they will look for from the rest of the European Union, including in Ireland. That's the first thing we don't know the answer to. Then as to what options they have, they can, of course, apply for the European Economic Area, which, like Norway, would allow them to keep all the privileges of EU membership, but without having a say in EU decisions.
I want to break free.
Interventions and commentary combined with visits to the North and Britain by Taoiseach Enda Kenny have angered the Leave campaign. Democratic Unionist Party MEP Diane Dodds believes politicians on this side of the border should keep their noses out.
The Irish government is entitled to a view. What it's not entitled to do is to seek to persuade or impose that view on anybody in Northern Ireland. What I really object to is the scaremongering that we have had from the Taoiseach, from Bertie Ahern, and from other members of the Irish political establishment, where they are actually threatening peace in Northern Ireland, throwing open other avenues for scaremongering.
Scaremongering or not, Sinn Féin President and Louth TD Gerry Adams says there's no escaping the fact that border counties in particular would be affected by a Brexit.
It could have implications for the economy. A third of the exports from the north come into the Irish state. The Irish state is the fifth biggest market for Britain. All of that in terms of tariffs and so on could have a negative effect. So despite our criticism of the European Union, we will be calling people to vote, people in the north to vote to remain.
And we'll examine in more detail the possible impact of Brexit would have on businesses and cross-border trade on our main lunchtime news at 1.
Should I stay or should I go?
The tension there with four teams now, two in each bowl, and you can hear the groans and the atmosphere building here. And it's really, it's just extraordinary in here at the moment. As the lively on Switzerland draw goes for the pulse of from the ball. Here we go.
Which will oppose Dundalk.
Dundalk at home. First round at home, Dundalk. Who did it get? You can hear the reaction here. Oh my goodness gracious me. And there's an intake of breath here. It's amazing. Here we go.
Yeah.
In Poland. What a draw that is. What a draw that is in the first leg here. You can hear the reaction here.
Can we have another memorable night, this time in the Dutch town of Alkmaar? 88 minutes gone in the match now. Just 2 minutes of normal time left for play, and the referee is across there just having a word with Ron Vlaar and Andy Boyle, who are giving each other a little bit of attention in there, and a little bit of buffeting going on inside the penalty area. The free kick will now be taken by Daryl Horgan on this left-hand side, right-footed, in swinging. Can he find a dangerous ball? It is a good ball! Yeah! It's in the back of the
net. Get in, Kieran Duff.
Who has come on and he's the Dundalk here. Yeah. 89 minutes gone.
Brilliant.
Dundalk, maybe a man down. There may have been a goal
down. Absolutely brilliant.
But now they're level.
Get in there, you lad. Yeah, told you, set pieces, win you a majority of games, Adrian. In fairness, it's a great ball in by Daryl Horgan. And who's come on? Steve, like, in fairness to Stephen Kenny, you know, he's gone for it. You know, we were saying, like, he may as well get 2-0 down, you know me, but in fairness, it's a great ball in, and what a header from Kilduff. What a header. You can see him celebrate with the Dock supporters. They're going mad in the stadium. What a night for Dundalk.
He and I were the only two in the house, and he closed the door. And
that's your father?
That's my father, yeah. And he picked me up and brought me upstairs up to his bedroom and took my clothes off and proceeded to abuse me, took his clothes off and proceeded to abuse me. And what I remembered later about that, because I remembered and I was 18 when I remembered that, when that vivid picture came to me, and my body knew it had happened. It wasn't I was making something up, or I didn't even have to question myself. And I remember a friend of mine was with me when it happened, and she knew I was falling asleep, and this memory came into my head like it was happening right now. And I subsequently, through working with Rape Crisis Centre and stuff, found out about flashbacks and how this can happen, and you're not making stuff up. But even my friend was looking at me and the hysterics that I was in, and she was going, oh my God, I have no question that this is anything but real. But what came to me years afterwards was that I knew that this wasn't the first time my little self was very aware. I knew what was going to happen. I knew it was coming next.
So this happened before the age of three,
it did,
but you have no recollection.
Yes. I have no recollection, no.
This was your father. How often did he continue to abuse you?
He abused me until I was, my last memory of him abusing me when I was little was I was 4 and a half, because I remember I was in my school uniform. And I was very proud of the fact that I had a school uniform, because it meant I was a big girl. And then he became disinterested in me as I got older, or, you know, did stopped abusing me until I was older again, until I was a teenager and was suddenly had a form that was interesting. You know, I had a young woman's figure, and then he was interested in
so
me again.
He stopped.
And started. He stopped, but almost as soon as he stopped, my brothers started.
So these were your two older brothers,
these are my
because
two
older you had
brothers,
four
yeah.
brothers
I'd
and
four,
a sister.
That's right. Yes.
Two older brothers. And when did they start? What can you pinpoint an age?
Yes, I was six, because I remember being, and the words were, "I let you off," for my seventh birthday, and I remember I made my first Holy Communion when I was six, and I remember being abused in my dress.
In your home?
Yeah.
And how frequently yes. did these two boys indulge themselves with you?
One or the other. I mean, I would have, to be euphemistic about it, a night visit from one or the other of them, sometimes five times a week.
For how many years?
Until they left for college, until I eventually reported, sorry, to answer your question more succinctly, until I was 13.
I had given the doctor my number, but I'd also given him my sister-in-law's number. She's really good at getting things done and she's real efficient. So she was ringing up to try and get the results back, but pretending to be me. And I'll never forget, I was up in Drogheda. She rang, where are you? I'm up in Scotch Hall. And, all right, okay. Will you be long? Like, oh, I don't know yet. I'm thinking we're going to the Roma for something to eat afterwards. And she's like, all right, that's okay. 20 minutes later, my sister rang back. Yeah, we need you to come home. We got the results. Went into my sister's house. My sister-in-law was there as well. I think you need to sit down. Yeah, you have got Hodgkin's lymphoma. Okay, going to have to get treatment. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. It's just a bump in the road, I said. You know, it's grand. I told Mum. She just started bawling and crying. But I was like, Mum, I'm going to be okay. I was like, I'm away for food. See you later. Because the Roma closes early on a Thursday. That's what I remember. It was a Thursday. Everything was done up in the Lourdes. Fine, because only 20 minutes up the road. I had the early stages of Hodgkin's lymphoma. The treatment wasn't going to be as long. The treatment started, I think it was the 9th of May in 2014. It was just like in a small little room up in the oncology unit. But I kind of remember just sitting there being like, Jesus, I'm the youngest one here. So every 2 weeks I had to go up and get chemo done and get my blood taken and that. There was about four different drips that were going into me. So all I can describe is like an extension lead nearly off plugs. I just had to sit there for 3 hours and just kind of let it drip slowly in. You get a real like metal taste in your mouth. And I was never afraid of needles before. As the treatment went on, my veins started to collapse in my hand and the nurses were finding it hard to find veins, so they'd be poking around. And I remember just sitting there like, oh. He thought that I'd need radiation as well, but he decided against that. It's shrinking by itself. After the last one, I remember saying to Dad, when am I ever going to feel normal again? I was like, I don't know what normal feels like. The chemo that like obviously makes you lose your hair and like put on weight or lose weight. I put on weight in my case. I was like a little potato. And then I look back at pictures, I look like a scarecrow. I was like, why did you just let me out like that? I would have been better just probably shaving it off.
And what sort of problems now? I mean, whatever you're comfortable to relate or speak about, what sort of problems would you say you would experience perhaps on a common basis?
Well, being a trans guy in a girls' school, and then being a trans guy in like a family that doesn't really understand or isn't as accepting. That's like, and then obviously the day-to-day thing where people see you and they like immediately assume that you're a girl, or like people see me and they assume I'm a guy until I open my mouth and have a really high-pitched voice and they're like, oh, sorry, I thought you were a guy.
Yeah, like myself and James have kind of similar enough issues, but I mean, I live in a very accepting environment. I'm very, you know, kind of okay with who I am at home, but in school it's not the same. So, you know, he has the same issue as me of being very kind of aware of yourself. You're kind of, when you're transgender and you're a young person, you're very aware of yourself, but the transgender part of it, adds to it. So you're hyper aware of how you're presenting yourself, how you're talking to people, and how people perceive you. So it's just this added stress. But going to the group and having someone like him and to talk to about, you know, the issues that we face on a day-to-day basis, whether it be about, you know, like discomfort in ourselves or our experiences with people, you know, maybe not taking to us well or whatever, it's just very kind of comforting, you know.
And so off the men went, led by their captain and leader, Patrick Devan, to walk the 4 miles to the site of Wild Goose Lodge, home of Edward Lynch and his family.
Anyone who resists will be killed just as surely as the family. No mercy is the password for tonight. And not a word and you're a corpse where you stand. Surround the house, boys.
My child! My child! Is still safe. He's an infant. A young traitor that never harmed you nor anyone. Your mothers, your wives, and young innocent children like him. Oh, spare him. Think for a moment that it's one of your own. Spare it, or if you don't, in your mercy, shoot me first. Put an end to me before I see him burned.
You'll prosecute no one now, Thomas Rooney, a bloody informer. You'll convict no more boys for taking an old gun and pistol from you or for giving you a neighbourly knock or two into the bargain.
The men looked on as the house and all inside burned to the ground.
And then I remember going out to the monks of Mellifont one day and saw this elderly monk who spotted me. And he asked me, did I get the confession? And I said, no, maybe it was the thing they asked every visitor to the place. And I said, no. And he said, well, listen, we can do it right here on the grounds, the path up to Mellifont Abbey there. And I knelt down and confessed the sins and confessed about being gay. And next I got up and next this elderly monk got down on his knees and he said, now, he said, will you pray for me? He said, I'm like you as well. I suffer from the same affliction as yourself. That's the way he put it. And then he got up and he said, for your penance, he said, I want you to look in the mirror and just remember that you're made in the image and likeness of God. Now, what I remember about that, this was the first priest that ever said to me, I am like you. Number two, the first who ever didn't send me away feeling guilty for who I was or full of shame. And I will never forget Father Andy Ducey. And these moments and these people who just mirrored back to me something that was very different than their culture and were big-hearted people.
Well, as you know, TDs are set for a pay increase. Ironically, it may seem, under the Lansdowne Road Agreement, their pay is to increase by €5,400 over the next 2 years, the first half payable from the 1st of April. Some might say that's April Fool's Day, and we won't be made fools of. If that is the case or not, well, we went out and about to find out. Marie Kearns has been speaking with some local people to see what they think.
I don't think they should get an increase. They already get enough money as it is. I think it's unfair. The likes of even going back to students like myself, I was 4 years in college and then I ended up being on €50 extra on a dollar for doing a job bridge program that I was doing work that I shouldn't have been doing. And now I'm on a basic wage in my normal job that I do. So $9.15 an hour. I don't see why I work 40 hours a week, $9.15 an hour, and they'd be getting extra money for doing not much. Like,
I don't think they should. The old age pensioners should have got more.
So you think that the old age pensioners are being hard done by?
Hard done by, yeah. As much as the politicians, they'd be very happy.
No, they shouldn't get it. Or they shouldn't take big time.
You think they get enough?
Oh, too much. Too much for the work they do. That's my opinion.
No, I genuinely don't. I think the TDs are in a position to show... they're in the perfect position to show to the people, this is what we have to do. The country's not making, you know, it's still in the gutter as such, and everybody's cut backs and pay rise, nobody's getting pay rises or whatever. And the TD, the best way to show example, to do anything, is to buy example. Like, you go in and you're training someone in the shop, but there's no point in telling them to do something. You do it yourself and they see how it's done and then they do it. So the best way for the TDs is refrain from your pay rises. Be grateful for what you have. There are many out there that have nothing near to what you ever have or ever will. Be grateful for what you have and keep on working for the good and the better of everybody, starting from yourselves.
As most of you know, one of the crew missing from Coast Guard Rescue 116 is a Blackrock man, pilot Mark Duffy. I had the privilege of interviewing Mark alongside his brother Donard here on Late Lunch in December 2013. And in the course of the interview, we talked about his job with the Coast Guard. He talked passionately about how much he enjoyed the work, but he also spoke about the risks.
It's all about calculated risk to a certain degree. I know there's days I get people saying to me, look after yourself when you go to work and whatever else. To be quite frank with you, it's the drive from the house to work and back home is usually the harrowing bit, not so much the flying end of things. But certainly, yes, it's maybe there in the back of your head, and that's where training comes in to a certain degree. But yes, you're aware of that, but you train to the best of your abilities to try and deal with whatever emergency might be thrown at you. Luckily, statistically wise, helicopter crashes are few and far between. The statistic I will give you is helicopters have saved more lives than they have taken. I enjoy working for the Irish Coast Guard. It's a very rewarding job. It can be very demanding. It can be stressful. There are things you see that aren't the prettiest, but all in all, when you make a difference, there really is no better feeling than that, I have to say. It's priceless.
At this stage, we were very, very worried. Siobhan was ridiculously anxious. She's really petrified, and her anxiety really passed on to us. So we were pleading with the two guards on the side of the road, take us into custody, take a statement. They said, they basically said, do you know how long it takes to take a statement? That takes over two hours at least to take a statement. You have to give your statement to Tony Golden. You can do that, he's off duty, you can do that tomorrow. Also said, we have to cover all of Carlingford and the whole Cooley Peninsula. We're too busy, we can't take a statement. And at this stage we were saying, this guy is threatening to kill us, he's going to kill our family, we need help, can you not even take us into custody? And basically the answer we got was no. Okay. Go away.
So you did ultimately see Tony Golden, and he took it very seriously and accompanied you and Siobhan to the house, and I suppose we all know the terrible outcome of all of that, and now we're hearing serious questions. Do you think that Craven Macken was untouchable to some degree, that he was protected to some degree because he was an agent of the state, because he was an informer?
Siobhan had told us during that day that as he was beating her, he said he was invincible because he was an informer, he could do whatever he likes.
You believe because he was an agent for the state, they didn't take your complaint in Dundalk and that you weren't protected because he was being protected over the need to protect you and your daughter, and indeed Garda Tony Golden as it transpired.
Absolutely. Like, we were trying to make a statement ourselves that this guy had threatened. He threatened when he was beating Siobhan that he was going to kill us, our entire family. We do believe he was at our house when we were the guards on Saturday night along the road. We believe he was outside our house that night. And we now know that in the boot of his car he had pipe bombs, he had drums of petrol, 700 rounds of ammunition and another gun. So we sort of know that he was there at our house the Saturday night. So absolutely, our lives were put at risk from the very start.
And finally, auditions for this year's Late Late Toy Show were held in Dundalk today. Children travelled from all over Louth and Meath and further afield for a chance to perform on this year's show. Host Ryan Tuberty was among those watching auditions at the Ballymiscanlan House Hotel. Our reporter Casey O'Riordan was there too.
Kids as far as Donegal headed to Dundalk this morning for the chance to live out every child's dream of being on the Late Late Toy Show. Ryan Tuberty says they've been pleasantly surprised by the talent the North East has to offer.
From my understanding of talking to the guys just a little bit earlier on, one of the reasons that we came here today was to see, do the children match up to the children around the country? And they say that they have been very pleasantly surprised and that the word is really good.
NC Kids, a choir group from Dundalk, are singing an original Christmas song written by their teacher Sinead McNally. She told me how she thinks their audition went.
Well, I was only allowed to stand outside the door, so I was listening very intentively at the back, and I just thought they were brilliant. I mean, they did their best, so it was wonderful, so couldn't have asked for better.
Sinead's student Ella also thinks the audition went well and was delighted to meet Tubbs himself.
He was just telling us jokes and stuff and making us laugh.
But what's this year's theme? That's something Ryan is remaining tight-lipped about.
Well, I know the theme, and I've had a I will tell no one anything, because otherwise it would end very badly for me and my career. I've had a costume tryout last week, and I think their plan is to try and make me look as stupid as possible, and it's working.
Do you remember me from Drogheda Hospital?
Why were you in Drogheda Hospital?
I broke my arm.
Did you?
Yeah.
When was this?
Probably last year. Yeah, last year, but the season was just about to start.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember you. You were in a nice big sling, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's a classic, were you?
Who's the best Dundalk fan?
The best Dundalk fan? Jeez, I don't know who the best Dundalk fan, and there's loads of them. Jason, I'd say, Warren's pointing at you here now, saying you are Jason, so that must be the answer I was looking for, was it? Oh, yes, it must be you, Jason, yeah. No, what?
If you go to the Europa League final, would you like to be wearing that captain's armband?
No, Stevie would be wearing the captain's armband.
What would you like to be wearing?
No, it's Stevie's armband. He can have it.
Are you Ian Gray's uncle?
Am I who?
Ian Gray.
Ian Gray. I'm not his uncle, no, but I think I'm going out with his aunt.
Is your boss kind of bossy or not?
He's not too bad, but when he needs to be, he can be very bossy. But no, most of the time he's pretty all right. You know, I've definitely had far worse managers.
I got trialled for QPR. Can you tell me any advice?
When are you going over?
Two weeks.
2 weeks. Jeez, good luck. Just play your own game. I wouldn't be getting too worried or nervous. You know, it'd be a great experience for you. But, you know, there'll probably be lots more. Hopefully this one works out for you. But if it doesn't, there'll be plenty more opportunities as well. So I wouldn't get too worked up by it. But enjoy it.
Is your captain kind of bossy?
Like Stephen? Yeah, extremely bossy. Yeah, he's a bit of a loose cannon when you give him the captain's armband, to be honest with you. But, no, sometimes he has to be. You know, he has to make sure no one's slacking off. And, no, he's a very, very good captain, to be fair to him.